Primetime replay from Money FM 89.3.
This is Primetime on Money FM 89.3. Now, regulatory tech company Acuity shares their perspectives today on the impact of economic sanctions and how organizations can be better equipped ahead of 2020. Now, in the United States, for example, the Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, has now sanctioned almost 40% more entities compared to 5 years ago. Entities relating to narcotics trafficking make up the greatest proportion of the OFAC list.
Closer to home, Singapore has made progress since 2016 in strengthening measures to tackle money laundering and terrorist financing. In November 2019, the Financial Action Task Force has re-rated Singapore's level of compliance.
Joining us to tell us more is David Pan, Head of Professional Services, Asia Pacific, and Sarab Nagar, Manager of Business Solutions Group, Asia Pacific at Acuity. Now, David, let's start with you. Why don't you maybe help us out and detail the pros and cons of economic sanctions?
Let's take a step back and just understand what economic sanctions are. So it's been used as a monetary policy tool for governments to punish bad actors that are guilty of money laundering, terrorism, narcotics, or transnational crime, or even human smuggling or human rights abuses. So in that sense, what it's done, one of the pros of sanctions, or one of the pros of sanctions enforcement, is it allows this closer collaboration between the public sector and the private sector. So when you look at the headline-grabbing news that, you know, perhaps the U.S. regulator or MAS here has fined or sanctioned someone, it creates the sanctions awareness within the general population that there are certain people or actors that you just shouldn't be dealing with, right, from that point of view. But potentially from a negative point of view, the cons is that sometimes not everyone could be aware of certain sanctions regulations or its long arm jurisdictional reach. For example, here in Singapore, a couple of years ago in 2012, 2013, there was this case for this company called CSE Transtel. And they were actually caught up with the U.S. regulation, with the U.S. regulator, just the U.S. Treasury's OFAC, Office of Foreign Asset Control. So what happened there was they were guilty of providing 104 wire transactions on behalf of their company to Iran for dealing with an Iranian oil company. But really, they were a Singapore company dealing with Iran. It didn't violate MAS regulations, but because they were doing the transactions in U.S. dollars, they did incur U.S. violations. So because
and you can't claim ignorance.
Exactly. So, and then they were fined actually $12 million for that violation. Pros allows for the better collaboration. Con being you really have to understand where your risks are. You may feel that as a local SME or as a local company, you may not be as exposed to the United States. But if you're dealing with U.S. currency or if you do have physical exposure to some of these countries, you really need to take a step back and look at what your risks are.
And can you tell us about how some of the cons can be mitigated? I mean, we've heard how it leads to deglobalization, it may impair innovating, etc.
Sure. On that point, I think we need to also sort of segregate the concepts. So there is the economic sanctions concept aspect of it, and then there's also the deglobalization, decoupling, or the wider tariffs that we've been seeing, or the restriction of technology. The rise of protectionism. But I feel that these are concepts that have much wider implications in geopolitics. Whereas if you take a step back and just if you look at economic sanctions itself has actually been a concept that brings international collaboration together. It's actually increased international collaboration. So a case in point being North Korea, right? If you think about in 2018 or 2017, there were a series of ICBM tests coming from North Korea. And that actually brought Russia, China, the United States closer together and pushed through unprecedented maximum pressure sanctions in the UN Security Council, right? And that actually brought North Korea to the negotiation table here in Singapore as part of the summit here. So if anything, economic sanctions is an area, you know, it brings people closer together. It brings, it's actually part of more international collaboration.
Sarah, maybe you could tell us who might the biggest losers of economic sanctions be then. It sounds like David was saying, perhaps SMEs, and you can't claim ignorance, so you've really got to stay on top of things, don't you?
Yeah, I agree. The biggest losers, in my opinion, are the ones who are sanctioned. Right?
Of course.
Otherwise, if you look at in the last couple of years, sanctions are the tool of choice by the United States, right? They are cheaper, they are nonviolent, especially less costly than doing a military action. The biggest losers, in my opinion, would be the ones who are sanctioned. And I have some numbers for you here. If you look at the sanctions on Iran, after the U.S. sanctions were imposed on Iran, the oil exports went down from 2.3 million barrels, that was April last year, to 300,000 a day.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And that's causing them to lose $36 billion U.S. dollar a year. Significantly, that's a loss for the sanctioned entity as well. It's a double-edged sword, right? So if you are sanctioning somebody, you are also losing business. Your own businesses would not be able to trade with that entity. SMEs, as you rightly pointed out, are some of the entities that find it more complex to implement sanctions controls.
Also, it hurts more if you're fined.
Yes.
Just based on the fact that you're smaller, right?
Yes. Yeah. So the fact that you are small and you have lack of resources in the form of qualified personnel who understand regulations, anti-money laundering in general, as well as the lack of infrastructure in the form of controls. I deal with a lot of customers and institutions here in APAC. Although the awareness now is increasing, but there's still a need to enforce more training internally, as well as implementation of technological controls within the SMEs in order for the reduction of, you know, the cost and complexity for them. So yes, you're right, SMEs find it difficult. However, if they are able to implement a program, an AML program, considering new technologies as well as an awareness program internally where they train personnel, I think it's not difficult for them to navigate the waters.
Well, right here on Money FM 89.3, we're talking to David Pan, Head of Professional Services, Asia Pacific, and Saurabh Naga, Manager of Business Solutions Group, Asia Pacific of Equity. Well, tell us, gentlemen, I've been hearing you guys talking. It feels like a movie, you know, where the fight is always against like organized crime, like in this case, narcotics and
money laundering.
Yeah. I mean, is it true?
I mean, I really like the question. And honestly, I'm not a movie buff, but I would love to be in the movie.
Okay.
Imagining myself.
Narcos and
in
whatnot,
Narcos,
right?
Yeah. Imagining myself at the center of the crime scene, where I am helping the world design tools to mitigate these risks. In reality, however, like in the movies, the bad guys always would find loopholes. It's the responsibility of the public sector as well as the private sector. So it's a public-private partnership, as David was mentioning.
To what? Patch up the loopholes?
To patch up the loopholes. It's about coming up with controls, but not staying with those controls for indefinite time. Reevaluating those controls, those policies, those sanctions regimes, and tweaking it so that we are able to identify new threats, new typologies. And that is what is happening in the world today. So your sanctions regimes such as OFAC, which is the U.S. regulator, MAS here, everybody, you know, every year, they keep on coming up with newer typologies that the institution needs to detect. And the private sector, which includes you know, the institutions as well as the technology partners like us, we need to provide tools in order for institutions to be able to detect these anomalies.
But there's another layer to that too. Once your regime starts to evolve as quickly as, say, the loopholes are being created, you have to get the word out too to people so that they know that this is how it's evolving and that they too can adhere to it. Right, David?
Right. So I feel like it's always a cat and mouse game, right? Mm. You know, it's just that when there are bad guys and good guys, cops and robbers, is that age-old analogy there. Mm-hmm. So there are always going to be loopholes. But fundamentally, when we put in these measures and we do the R&D and we come up with new systems to help our clients address some of the new technological challenges, what we're seeing is that we make it much more expensive for bad guys to move their money. right? Whereas before, they might just be able to walk into the bank and tell them, hey, want to wire some money. Now, they can't do that, right? They have to think about setting up additional measures and bypassing some of these tools and enforcement policies that are in place. So at the end of the day, it's always going to be a cat and mouse game. I don't know if there will ever be a
resolution,
or a tool, but definitely it's getting a lot more expensive.
Okay, tell us, what new areas might economic sanctions be necessary?
So we've got the age-old ones already, narcotics and money laundering. Are there other areas that need looking at as well? I think David earlier talked about human trafficking.
Certainly there are areas that, you know, lawmakers can look at in policies and saying, well, where does it make sense for us to levy economic punishments? But really at the end of the day, I think that's more along the lines of the public sector to pass these new guidance and
cybercrime maybe. But that's really broad too.
Right. It is broad. It is broad. In fact, you know, that's a whole another area in cybersecurity. Levy economic sanctions against certain actors or other measures in place, right? So I feel like it's a wider topic for
another day.
What I would like to say that we need greater enforcement of the sanctions that are already there, right? Human rights violation, we already have sanctions coming up. Magnitsky Act is the one in the U.S. which have individuals who have violated human rights. Certainly there's individuals identified who violated human rights for the Rohingya crisis in Myanmar. So yes, the regulations are, sanctions are coming against those. But in my honest opinion, we need to enforce these regulations greater with more force at least in this part of the world where there's a lack of awareness in businesses.
So you do feel that the sanctions are enough, just that people might not be aware, so maybe not so effective? What's lacking?
It's a lack of awareness at number one. I'll give you an example. So it depends. In certain jurisdictions, people might think, and businesses, institutions might think that if this individual or this entity is sanctioned, I don't need to do business with them. But there's also a third-party risk. I no longer have to just identify if my immediate customer is sanctioned, but I also need to identify if their customers. We need just not the awareness about it, but also, you know, tools that can help these institutions detect these anomalies. Tools, when I say tools, it's not only about the software tools, but also data. So you need technological partners who can provide this information. We, as David was mentioning early on, we invest a lot in research and development of these tools so that you know, institutions who are our customers can be protected. So in my honest opinion, the question should be, how can we better enforce these sanctions regulations?
Right.
So especially if you look at some of the, we talk a lot about the United States and OFAC, but really, I think it's one of the most challenging regulatory regimes that are out there. It's like peeling back the layers of an onion. They just have so many different programs, and then they have this concept of secondary sanctions, right? Secondary sanctions being that you actually can't, you know, you might yourself might not be sanctioned, but you're either with us or against us. So if you choose to willingly do business with a sanctioned individual or entity, depending on the volume that you do, you might yourself might be subjected to sanctions, right? Because you can either choose the United States market, the biggest economy in the world, or you can choose to do business with this other market. So very challenging.
Okay, I'd like to hear your thoughts about how can fast access to relevant information help with compliance?
Because also if you're not aware, you don't know what you don't know, so you don't know what you're looking for, even if the information were out there.
That's correct. So there's a need to have processes which can monitor changes, right? So I'd like to start with some numbers. I'm a numbers guy. And this is a research that Acuity did earlier this year. And this is related to just OFAC, because they're the most significant. There has been a 37% increase in the number of sanctioned entities within OFAC in the last 5 years. And that, in numbers, that's 2,500-ish entities. Right. So the last 5 years is a lot. In the last 1 year, it's around 1,500. Right. So, and it's happening at a more frequent frequency. It is no longer predictable. Even vessels are now being sanctioned. There was 164% increase in the number of vessels that has been sanctioned. And only this year, up until now, we have had $1.3 billion in fines by OFAC. So it's increasingly becoming complex and costly for institutions to be not compliant. And there's also a cost to be compliant, right? Because you need to proactively monitor changes as they're happening very frequently. So having and access and timely access to the information related to sanctions update is very important. If you are relying on manual tools to do this in 2019, where technology has picked up and we are all on our phone getting feeds on our social media, and if you're relying on manual processes, you are at a risk of human errors, and you might not be able to comply. So use technology that is right for you. So it depends on what kind of institution it is, what is their risk. So you have to identify your own risk and use the technology that is right for you and systems that is right for you and build controls around that to be able to be compliant.
How accessible are some of these solutions, especially for smaller companies, again, because the not-so-deep pockets, right? Mm-hmm.
These solutions are pretty accessible. And these solutions, and I can talk about it because we are a solution provider on this. There are different ways of accessing these solutions depending on the nature of the business. If you're a smaller business, you might want to have a lightweight solution that does not hurt your pocket, right? And you're still compliant. You're still getting information in a timely manner, right? If you're a bigger business, meaning huge volumes of customers, huge volumes of transactions,
you might need a more complex solution.
You need a more complex solution that can be scaled, right? Because you want to grow. And at the same time, you do not want to ignore sanctions risk.
David Pan, Head of Professional Services, Asia Pacific, and Sarab Naga, Manager of Business Solutions Group, Asia Pacific at Equity. All right, here, Money FM 89.3. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming to the studio.
Thank you. Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.